and welcome to another episode of Temporal Culture War, where we dig into what the hell was going on in America in the early 2000s while we watch one of television history's most maligned properties, Star Trek : Enterprise. I am your science officer for this episode, and my name is Maddie Lipchansky.
I'm Clayton Ashley, and I'm the captain.
That's correct. You are the captain now. It is this week on our show. It is episode 9 of season 2, titled The Singularity, and the week of November 20th, 2002. So yeah, do you want to dive? You want to dive right into what was happening?
Yeah, I mean, I want to get through it because I want to talk about this episode for once. I'm curious.
For once, they made a really good episode of Star Trek Voyager. this episode rips. Actually, I want to get into it. I was like pleasantly surprised. Okay, so kind of a slow news week. It's the week before Thanksgiving. Here in America.
I keep forgetting how off we are from the actual calendar
We're
right now.
Very off from the actual calendar because we are not doing it the week that it is. So, great news, Clayton. Incredible news. This week, UN inspectors have arrived at Iraq to begin the search for weapons of mass destruction. So, my memory's a little spotty from this time, but I imagine it gets cleared up pretty soon because I recall that Iraq didn't have the weapons. Mm-hmm. Right?
Well, but then what did Colin Powell have in the UN?
Oh, interesting. He probably made something up then.
The thing I keep thinking about is these guys they're in white lab coats with giant inspector on them or something?
Yeah, my only conception of it is from a political cartoon and it's a guy wearing a UN helmet with a big magnifying glass. I don't know what the fuck they're doing. They're getting tours of the facilities that they think might be, enriching uranium, whatever the fuck, but it's just the inspectors are here. They are beginning. We are now into full on, it is time for the Iraq war now.
I feel like yellow cake kept coming up. I kept hearing
about
this yellow cake.
To talk about the yellow cake? Uranium. Yellow cake, uranium. I don't know. I don't know a lot about uranium. And I feel like we all had to learn a lot about it back then. But for some reason, there was a moment where it was you have to know about what enriching uranium is or does, how do you enrich uranium and what does that mean? And I don't know.
Yeah. And you had to understand white powders a lot more.
You had to really have a grasp on what powders are. Also in the news this week, the only other news item I've got is the day of this episode airing, November 20th, was the Michael Jackson baby dangling incident.
Oh my God.
And if you're are again, I don't know. I have, please. I need every single one of you to write in and say what age you are, because I have no idea how fucking old our listenership is. I assume everybody's my exact age. That's how I operate in life. I go down the street and I just figure everyone I meet is my born at the same hospital as me at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. Watch the same TV shows and listen to the same music.
Yeah, you have, you listening right now, you have the exact 100% same life experiences as me, right? Okay, just making sure. I'm sorry about your weird dream last night because you have the same, everything about you as me. Okay, so I was fighting my dad. It was very strange. I don't know why. So the baby dangling incident, if you're not familiar, Michael Jackson, the star of Stage and Screen. he was in Berlin on tour and he had an infant son whose name is Blanket. And there was a bunch of fans outside of his window as he was often mobbed by fans because Michael Jackson fans were and are psychos about him. But they were all outside of his window of his hotel. And he was like, I'll show you the baby. So he put a blanket over the baby's head so you couldn't see his face, of course, to protect his privacy. And then dangled the baby out the window over the balcony. He that day said he regretted doing it.
Wasn't part of it that the way he did it, it looked like for a second he lost his grip.
Yeah, I mean, he looked like he was going to drop his fucking baby.
Yeah.
Very much. It was insanely dangerous. An insanely dangerous act by, you can't slander the dead, but by a man who, at best, was just wildly irresponsible and insane.
Yeah,
and at worst was something way, way, way worse than that.
I don't know where we were in the Michael Jackson saga, and I don't particularly want to get into it, but I feel like this was the height. There was controversy at this point. There was...
Yeah, this is the height of, wacko-jacko stuff.
Yeah.
Yes, very much so.
And yeah. So when you say like that, this was the only news story of the week, that's because it was all the news needed.
It was all the news. We're not even, we don't even care about the various cakes and powders anymore. We're now, we're out of cake and powder.
This was wall to wall. All the news were covered. I feel like what I remember, and this could be completely wrong, but I feel like it was dominating news. It wasn't just celebrity news.
Oh, it was everything. It was
multiple
everything
pictures in newspapers.
Months. Like months, months and months and months. Okay. I'm going to do TV next because it's boring this week. Usual suspects. Our lunch is being eaten. There's like no premieres that are interesting to me this week in television. Nothing interesting happening. Really, again, it's like a dead time of year for TV. Our lunch is getting eaten by 60 Minutes 2, Bernie Mac, Cedric the Entertainer, My Wife and Kids, George Lopez, Ed, etc. We are only beating Dawson's Creek. I feel weird this week, a few days after Mr. Vanderbeek, by all accounts, a sweetheart. Everyone seemed to like him.
Oh, gosh. No, I forgot.
Tragically passed away. So I'm just like, my first thought was, you know, every week I go on my little show and I call him the vile Dawson. So I just want to, out of respect, when I say the vile Dawson, I mean the character of Dawson Creekworth or whatever his name was.
Yeah, yeah. Isn't it called, isn't someone on the show called Dawson? I guess it's the
one. He's Dawson. Mr. Vanderbeek is Dawson.
Okay.
So,
Armistice this week. It's fun.
An Armistice this week with Dawson, who we barely beat, by the way, is like 0.02 points.
After they won last week. So, you know.
You know what? It's fair play, Dawson. We'll see you on the field of glory next week.
Yeah.
Okay. Music. Music. New this week. Only a couple of things. New at number 77 is Audio Slave's Cochise. Remember Audio Slave?
I do because I bought this album. You've actually hit an album I bought, and I don't know why.
Well,
in retrospect,
this is so. They're at the first Audio Slave album comes out. So Audio Slave, if you do not recall them, listener. They were, so Rage Against the Machine broke up in 2000, year 2000, when Zach De La Rocha left the band. They were just, him and Morello and the other guys were just fighting constantly, and they didn't like each other anymore. So Zach De La Rocha, the singer, he leaves the band. The rest of Rage Against the Machine, just is like, well, we're going to be somebody else's band now. Or like, we're going to get a new singer. We don't want to be like a band for hire. We're going to get a new singer. We're going to do a new project. They eventually settle on... They almost get a lot of people to do it. One of which, I was looking into this before, I kind of fell down the hole. They almost got Macy Gray to do it, which is would have been crazy. But they ended up with Chris Cornell of Soundgarden.
Yep,
R.I.P. Right. And, you know, the album comes out a couple of days before this episode airs. It's a self-titled album. It's not a bad song. I was listening to it today.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like Chris Cornell singing over Rage Against the Machine.
Yeah, I think that it's... He has a voice that's definitely his voice. And I... But I think this was one of those albums I got into because I was just starting to like think about and buy my own music, like the Blue album and what have you.
Right.
But this one, I feel like was one I just like because I like to drum to it.
Yeah. But, I mean, listen, this is not a bad song. It's a pretty good song. I don't love Cornell's voice. He's not my guy. He was never one of my guys.
Yeah.
I was too much of a punk to be into him, but I liked Rage and, it's very interesting because it is Rage Against the Machine, but no politics. Tom Morello is right there. He's a political guy too, but he's not Zach De La Rocha. Anyways, so Cochise, I don't know how you pronounce that. But it's the first track off their first record. Comes out this week. And this is number 77. Number 72 is Ja Rule featuring regular man Bobby Brown, who's just a regular guy who's not weird. It's a song called Thug Lovin', which is the semi-forgotten first single off Ja Rule's fourth record, The Last Temptation. You probably remember the next single, which comes out in like a month, which is Mesmerize featuring Ashanti.
Yes.
But this is less of a...
less memorable?
Less memorable track. I put it on. I remembered it very vaguely, but it was not, you know, it's a little lost to time. But it's not a bad song. Ja Rule, not bad. He's fine. At 67 is Three Doors Down's When I'm Gone, which is the lead single from the album they put out after the Kryptonite album, which I remember that song, of course, and it is dog shit. It sucks.
It feels very 2002.
I hate it so much. It is exactly so like those first two songs. You're like, oh, like Audio Slave, not bad. Ja Rule, not bad. Like this doesn't really jibe with like the theory of mind of the show, but listen, baby, because the next couple we're talking about are there. This 3 Doors Down song is so bad. It is just like, I cannot even countenance, like, just, it is so, it's like a guy being so edgy about him being dead and we love him then, like, whatever, because I'm going to be fucking, I don't know. It sucks. I hate it. That song's at number 67. At number 69, sorry, I skipped over it because I want to talk about it. Uh-huh. There's a song called 19 Something by a guy named Mark Willis. A song I have never heard, but I listened to it today.
Do you regret it?
I regret it so deeply. So he was a country guy. He was like an early 2000s country guy, which I just did not pay attention to that shit. And it was still at this point, I think this kind of country music was still pretty siloed. Like, it was very popular, but only in the places and with the people it was popular with. So if you were not a country music person, you were not exposed to it. So, but the lyrics, it's about, it's just a guy being like, I remember what it was like when I was young. And like, I'm going to give you some choice readings of the lyrics from the song 19 something.
And if you think about this song, consider that the music video has the car with the stars and bars on top. What's that one?
The name of the car is the General Lee.
The General Lee.
Named after the guy who was the general for the Confederacy, you know, in the Civil War, where they wanted to, they were fighting so they can keep slavery active in America. Yeah. Remember that guy?
Prominently in this music video. Damn.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. So anyways, here's some lyrics. I saw Star Wars at least 8 times. Had the Pac-Man pattern memorized. And I've seen the stuff they put inside Stretch Armstrong. Yeah. I was a kid when Elvis died and my mama cried. It was 1970 something. In the world that I grew up in, Farrah Fawcett, hairdo days, bell bottoms, and 8-track tapes. It's just, this is like slop. This is slop for hogs. Hog slop.
Looking at the video, the music video, the other thing it's reminding me of is the like fucking evil white supremacist memes that the Homeland Security
This is return shit. Return with a V. Like, it was the dawning of a new decade. We got our first microwave and Dad broke down and finally shaved them old sideburns off. And I took all the stickers off my Rubik's Cube. Oh my Lord. It was 1980 something in the world that I grew up in. Skating rinks and black Trans Ams, big hair and parachute pants. Man, shut the fuck up. This is
I can see why it charted, unfortunately.
I can see why it charted. I don't think this guy was wearing parachute pants in the 80s. I'm just going to go ahead and say it. This guy doing like racist dog whistling stuff. Anyways, piece of shit song by a guy who I just imagine has to suck. Okay. And at number 62, rounding out our music portion of this episode, Christina Aguilera's second single off her fourth album, Stripped, which is, of course, Clayton. The song, Beautiful, because words cannot bring me down.
All right, I'm back. We're good. Now this is music.
Now this is music. This is a song I've not listened to in so long. That was obviously seared into my fucking brain forever because I was alive at this time and I heard this song every day for a year. But this song stinks. It stinks out loud. It's so cheesy. It's so maudlin cheesy. It sucks so bad. And I found a demented bit of the Wikipedia entry that I have to read into the record here because it made me insane. Beautiful has been widely embraced as an anthem by the LGBT community for its message of self-empowerment and inner beauty. An accompanying music video was directed by Jonas Åkerlund and earned Aguilera a GLAAD Media Award for his positive portrayal of gay and transgender people. In 2011, UK LGBT rights organization Stonewall named Beautiful the most empowering song of the previous decade for gay, lesbian, and bisexual people. I actually just want to, on the record here, on the show. As the show's resident LT. I officially to rebuke this.
Revoked.
I rebuke this. Here's the thing. I actually don't have a problem with Christina Aguilera.
I think
she's kind of, I just assumed she's the fun song, with it. In
the
general.
Song was still this, good. I hadn't listened a while, but
the song is bad. It's so bad. I mean, it gave us one beautiful moment in the movie Mean Girls, I guess. It did that for us. But man, oh man, what a dog shit time for music, huh? The best thing going was Audio Slave.
Oh, damn. Yeah.
Which is just dire. It's just dire stuff, man. All right. Now I'm gonna round out my duties as science officer by talking about the movies. And number 26 new this week is the film Ararat, which is a movie by an Armenian director named Adam Egoyan. It's got like Christopher Plummer and Eric Bogosian in it. And it's like a meta movie about people in Canada filming a movie about the Armenian genocide. And then, of course, it led to an insane thing where ethnic Turks in Canada tried to boycott Disney over it because it portrayed the Armenian genocide, or at least it said it acknowledged that it happened. Like, this is just one of those crazy things where it's like, it's just insane that it's just like, yeah, it didn't happen at all. It's a crazy stance to take.
How dare you make a movie about it? Jeez.
Yeah. Crazy, crazy, crazy. Anyways. So if you're an ethnic Turk, remember to boycott the film Ararat and continue your,
but Plummer Bogosian,
Plummer Bogosian, I'm there. And then a bunch of Armenian actors I've never heard of. At number 16, a movie I also don't remember called The Crime of Padre Amaro.
Whoa.
Which is it's a movie based on a 19th century Portuguese novel, but it stars Gael Garcia Bernal. Sounds cool. It was nominated for Best Foreign Language Picture at the Oscars.
Huh. Okay.
Perhaps you've heard of the Oscar Awards,
No. Clayton.
You cretin. No, but it's a Spanish movie that I've never heard of, but it seems to have done well critically. But that's that. Again, not a lot of stuff coming out. Our friend Femme Fatale is sitting at 11, having fallen out of the top 10 just 3 weeks into its run. Ghost Ship, our other friend, the less of a friend, in its fourth week is at number 13.
Nemesis.
Our nemesis, Ghost Ship. At number 5, the Steven Seagal vehicle, Half Past Dead, which of course stars Steven Seagal, Ja Rule, another rapper named Corrupt with a K, and Morris Chestnut.
I had a visceral physiological response to Steven Seagal vehicle, because I didn't realize he was still making movies that could chart to number 5 in 2002.
So this is before his exile to now he films in Kyrgyzstan and like doesn't get out of a chair while he's shooting his movie, but like and like guys run at him and he sits in the chair and just kind of like swats them away.
Yeah.
And guys like do crazy flips because he touches them. But anyways, this is Steven Seagal as an FBI agent named Sasha Petrosevich. Good. Yeah, crazy fucking it's got Monique is in this film.
Nice.
All right. But yeah, I love the good poster catchphrase here. The good, the bad, and the deadly.
They must have workshopped that one for a long time.
I'm reading here that it was panned by critics. That's interesting. and if you're wondering why there isn't a lot of new movies this week, despite it being right before the holiday season, 8 Mile has been knocked to number 2 because the decks have been cleared for something called, I'm reading this right, Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets. Which is interesting. It's got Daniel Radcliffe and a couple other. Emma Watson is in it. Mm-hmm. I don't remember this movie.
Is it Radcliffe in like theater?
the guy from Now You See Me Too. He was in a movie. He was a child actor. It's crazy. Swiss Army Man's Daniel Radcliffe. Remember see Swiss Army Man? That's a good movie. It's a good movie that I like. Anyways, the decks were cleared for Harry Potter. The second one.
Yeah.
This is the other bad one. Like they're all bad with a lowercase b for being evil.
The especially low quality but, like, ones are the first.
There's like a couple of good ones in terms of like, is this a good movie that is like a watchable film?
Mm-hmm.
Though, I mean, I'm never going to test this hypothesis because I'm done watching this dog shit. But like. And Joanne Rowling, I know you're listening. I hope something really bad happens to you. But this one, I recall being just absolute garbage. Like the first two, the Columbus ones are so bad.
Yes.
So
bad. And if I remember also, like, again, terrible person, Rowling, but also terrible author.
They're going to say Voldemort. It's a bad guy.
But bad,
not
bad
very
author,
nice. What?
Bad author, especially, yeah. I think this one typified the, like, oh, yeah, this school just has a house that is evil, and some of the kids just get put in it.
Well, yeah, I mean, okay. Like, so if I had a hat, I don't want to get too deep in the Harry Potter weeds here.
Of course.
But if I was putting people into dorms based on a psychic hat, I think I don't blame the school for putting all the kids that are evil.
You think it's better to just concentrate them as opposed to distribute them, or maybe say, like, you should go get therapy and then, think about schooling.
Yeah, I think, like, if there's, like, oh, everyone's a white supremacist, you put them together, they're going to get ideas, maybe.
Yeah.
So, but do you want one each? Do you want them all scattered to the wind where they can cause a lot of damage? Or, like,
that's, yeah, you know, yeah, it is a tough, you know, I mean, I've got all the logistics.
I think the humane thing is that the hat could kill them, maybe. I think in my version of the books,
some of the kids just fall over and cart it out.
Yeah, I think so. It's like in my mind, right? That because, like, the hat is psychic, right? Like, it's a psychic hat. It can see into your mind using its sort of like hat powers, right? So my thought is the hat can use, like, a sort of, like, while it's tapped in, like a sort of a psychic blast to kill you instead of putting you in the house with your other fellow white supremacists. I don't know.
Just start screaming, kill this kid now.
Kill him now. Shoot. Take the shot. You only take the shot. The hat is full of bullet holes. Anyways, this is not productive for our show about Star Trek Enterprise and the culture of the early 2000s. It's not. It's not productive. It's not a productive conversation. So I'm moving on. I'm done.
We're done.
I'm done with culture. It's time to talk about this episode.
You were relieved. I know it was a tough week, but you did great.
Thank you so much.
And now it'll get us to the episode.
Woo! Woo!
Okay, so we often talk about how this is not just a Star Trek podcast because we have that whole segment where we talk about culture and stuff.
Yes.
Because that's because usually Enterprise does not provide good Star Trek.
Great.
But this time they did. So
this
buckle
time
up.
They did. Buckle
if
up.
If you're
fuckers.
Here for Star Trek shit, because we actually got one.
We got a Star Trek on the line here.
Yeah, okay. So this is Singularity.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a cold open too. Okay. This is what a cold open means. And it's kind of annoying how often this series does cold opens that they did not need to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it's partly for the pacing and the intro and the commercial break, but I just wish it didn't have to be a cold open.
Every time, sure.
Every time. But this time it's so good because it's just like, only T'Pol remains. Like, that's just how it starts. And that's
everybody's
like,
sleepy. Everyone's asleep.
Well, I mean, we don't even know.
Or dead.
Dead or poisoned.
Yeah.
Like, what has happened to them? All we know is we're, like, slowly going through the ship. Everyone's knocked out, seemingly unconscious or something. They're just where they were standing.
Yeah.
But T'Pol is narrating, like, I am the only one here. They've been like this for this long. And if something doesn't happen soon, it's like she's, like, writing a record for someone who's going to find everyone dead, including her.
Yeah.
Because it seems like that's how bad it's gotten, which... Hot damn, I'm ready to watch an episode of Star Trek now because it's actually a good cold open.
That's right. I'm intrigued. I'm ready to listen to the theme song now.
Yes. And then we get into it. Mm-hmm. We're flashing back. So it's not an episode where we're just going to see T'Pol trying to figure out how to, like, you know, get out of the situation all in her lonesome. It's actually an episode about how do we get to this point.
A debottle episode.
Yeah.
T'Pol.
Well, I think we'll get that sort of later, but if I recall, I feel like there is a T'Pol episode.
Uh-huh. Say it. It sounds good. It feels good to say.
T'Pol. It does. T'Pol. So this first flashback, I just want to note a really beautiful dolly shot. Just like across the entire deck or the like main deck sweeping into them, just kind of talking about what is setting up this whole episode, which is that they're going to check out a trinary star system.
Yeah.
And I enjoy that finally doing the boring ass space shit that Archer seems to want to do all the time leads to something interesting for once, as opposed to they just look at three stars that orbit each other.
Right. Like the beginning of this episode is all like, oh, who fucking cares? Like, this is so stupid. I can't believe. And they're like, Okay, but how many times have we surveyed something that looks exactly like this?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And it's almost like a joke on the how often that's actually something that happens on this show. Like, we've seen how bored they are with this in a way. Also, Archer is almost more distracted by, like, he wants his chair fixed. Like, he's like, hey, I know, Trip, you're doing some important stuff, but yeah, my chair is really uncomfortable. Can you fix it?
Yeah. You're like, do you have some free time to fix my chair? And Trip's like, well, I was going to do this other thing. And he's like, fix my chair instead.
Yeah.
Which, you know, respect. This is the sort of thing that would drive me insane as well. If I was sliding off my chair.
It's not an illegitimate point. So I kind of like how mundane, but also we're getting a kind of a lot of mundanity on this episode that leads to interesting conflict, which I love.
Yes. Yes.
What we're also getting some other kind of like what people are doing this episode set up here, which you don't realize why until later, but like Archer's also personally trying to write the like opening of his dad's biography.
Yeah.
And that's tough for him. Sato, we find out, is actually, okay, I think we already knew that she's the coolest person on the episode, but it's like officially, or on the series, she's officially the person who would be the coolest to hang out with.
Yes.
Because she just hangs out with Chef, like, and learns how, and likes to learn how to cook. And it's just like, yeah, of course Sato would be that cool.
Chef is sick. And so she's got to fill in as Chef.
Because she's been hanging out with him all the time.
Which has been hanging out with him and also like wants to make her grandmother's Oden recipe.
Right. Yes, yes. So that's neat. I like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But she's also with a nerd. I just wrote, who's this nerd?
Who is that nerd? And never seen before, possibly never again.
No. And I wrote, because he's going to die, because that was my assumption. But as far as we know, he made it through the episode.
Who knows? We never see him again.
Yeah, we don't.
Oh, she's also like, I'm going to make Oden from scratch. Oden, like the traditional Japanese, like one pot. Like stew. They're like, you know, everybody makes it differently. Like your family will have a recipe or whatever.
Right.
And she's like, I'm going to make it from scratch. No replicator.
No. Yeah. Yeah. He's trying to like start replicating stuff. And
she's like, hey, you fucking nerd. No way. This is my fucking, you know, grandma's recipe. Do not fuck with it. Yeah.
She wouldn't use a microwave or a replicator.
No, she's And it's like, oh, I guess you have all the ingredients for Japanese food on board.
Exactly. Yeah.
Sure. Okay.
Brought that with you. Mm-hmm. So they, then we get kind of the last piece of this puzzle, or the last kind of like quadrant of this episode is Phlox. And down in Med Bay, Mayweather is visiting because he's got a headache. Like, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And he just is asking for some help. And Phlox starts checking him out. And nothing seemed too out of the ordinary at this point. But it's great because you're kind of like on heightened alert because of the cold open. Oh, so you're like, what's going on here?
I think we skipped one.
Did we?
It's Reed.
Of course. Yes, yes, yes,
Reed is like, I have to update the security protocols for the ship. We've been calling it like red status or whatever.
Did they even have anything? Because,
he started with like red status or red status or something.
Because he's been bringing this up in previous episodes. Like, this is not new for
like,
this
we need
episode.
To have like code, like, aside from battle stations, we need to have like an alarm that goes off. And everyone needs to know exactly what to do. The hull should be doing, like, we should be polarizing the hull automatically. Like, those other ships are like fucking us up too easily. This isn't a warship, but like, we have to have like some battle readiness. And you, the casual Star Trek viewer at home, you're going like, the invention of Code Red.
Code Red.
Idiotic. Which is like dumb prequelitis stuff, but it is kind of cute here.
It's this
because the episode utilizes. It is not just him. It's not just them being like, oh, we should put this in an episode. But it's like a character moment that is like that fits into what they're doing in the episode, which is cool.
And it leads to something. And it's like, yes, okay, I am actually okay with it this time.
Exactly.
So, yeah, all this stuff seems very like nothing out of the ordinary, but we're on heightened alert. And so I feel like it is actually the Phlox scene. It is the first one. I'm like, it's a little weird. But honestly, partly that's because, you'll have to remind me. I think it's the second time we come back to Phlox and Mayweather, but we literally get like scary music. And
it's a little scary. And also, Phlox is like, oh, Mayweather, maybe it's the neural implants that weird space station put in you. So you're like, oh, is something actually wrong here?
Yes. So this is, and also, you know, chef is sick. So I at least for me, I kind of latched on to like, okay, maybe there is something like health-wise going on.
Chef is sick. Mayweather has a mysterious headache. You saw everybody knocked out or dead. Like maybe it's a pathogen. It's yes.
And so Phlox being a little intense about like, hey, don't want to rule out anything. So we're going to be comprehensive here. That's not, that doesn't seem too weird, even though it is the first hint of what's going on. And I also just noted that that second Phlox scene is kind of, the camera is very mobile. And I'm like, okay, we got that dolly shot. Did they like get a new smaller camera that's easier to move around? Because this episode felt like it just had more dynamic cinematography. There's something.
I mean, who directed this bad boy? That's the real question.
I didn't check.
He didn't look. It's okay. I got it. It was directed by Patrick Norris.
Oh.
Who's just a guy who's directed a lot of TV.
I mean, it's a solid episode of TV in terms of its pacing and structure. So that makes a lot of sense. It's because when you say like, oh, this feels very Star Trek-y, well, that's just because Star Trek has generally been pretty good television. It understands what you do in an hour of television every week. And this series is the first one that had a problem with that.
He wrote the film Masterminds with Patrick Stewart, the guy who wrote this episode, Chris Black.
Interesting. Chris Black is the Xbox guy, right? Or one of them?
No, not this Chris Black.
Oh, okay.
But he's currently the showrunner of Monarch Legacy of Monsters with Ben Fraction. Okay.
All right.
Sure.
I mean, so I think this is the next scene, which is Trip is repairing the chair in on the deck. Also, I think this scene also has like a cool kind of cinematography with how it's moving around and showing that T'Pol and Trip are both in the space. T'Pol is just trying to do some sciencey shit at her like station, while Trip is like using the loudest tools to like work on this chair.
Yeah.
And she's kind of like, do you have to do that right now? I'm doing some important stuff the captain asked me.
And Vulcans have like sensitive hearings.
Yeah, that too. And Trip's just like, well, the captain asked me too, so I'll let you know when I'm done. Don't worry about it. Like, he's a jerk. It's again, not that outside of honestly how much of a jerk they are on the show just sometimes anyway, which is kind of funny.
Right.
But
yeah, like it just seems like Trip is maybe a little spicier than usual.
Yeah. We get Malcolm talking to Trip, who like takes the chair down to the hold and is like, or I think, no, they're eating. They're eating, and Malcolm is really intense about, you know, what word do you think I should use for the alert level? And like, while Trip is just not really paying attention because he's so invested in designs for the chair he's working on.
Right.
And then Sato comes in and is like, what do y'all think of the food? And so you're starting to get something here, which is they're all really focused on what they're doing and they don't give a fuck about what everybody else is doing.
Yeah.
Because Malcolm is in a jerk about like, I'm not hungry. I didn't taste it. She's like, but come on, you know, just let me know what you think of it. And he's like, well, honestly, it's kind of salty.
Man.
And okay, back to Phlox. He is now clearly, he's off his rocker. He is like, he basically says like, all right, something really concerning just came up in the last report. There's nothing wrong with your brain. And Mayweather's like, shouldn't that be good? And he's like, no, it just means the problem is hidden.
Right. This is where my brain is starting to get a little tickled. Like, everybody on the ship suddenly develop ADHD or autism, perhaps. This is how I get.
They're all hyperfixated on something.
They're all like hyperfixated on the things that they're doing. And it's very funny because it's like, yeah, like keeping with Star Trek tradition, the ship is staffed with the biggest dorks in the galaxy, right? Yes.
Yeah.
Like the way the astronauts are all dorks, because you have to know so much about so many things.
Yeah, if their job is a special interest, then they have.
Yeah, these are people that are hyper-fixated all the time anyway. So of course, like, a guy like Trip is going to go insane over the chair. I would do that also. I do that in my day-to-day life.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Becoming very one-track mind. And I also love that in this scene, Phlox starts saying something like, the next thing we have to do is a bilateral cerebral insection or something. And it like, what he's saying basically sounds like he's going to cut his brain open.
See, I got to cut your brain open. I got to go look. I got to get my hands in there.
Yeah. And I think he does have to trick Mayweather by being like, Oh no, I guess it comes one more step later, but I'll just say it now. He, like, Mayweather's starting to be like, I've got, Mayweather starts getting his own kind of special concern, which is that I'm going to get in trouble because I've been out of, like, at my, out of my post for so long. I've been here all night when I'm supposed to be sleeping. I've got to get back to my job or I'm going to get court-martialed. Like, he's starting to really spiral.
He spins out. Yeah.
And Phlox is just like, I cannot leave you here. That is an order. You have to get more tests. And eventually he's like, you know what? Okay, I'll let you go. But you asked for, you know, pain pills at the start of this whole thing. Let me just give you those, you know, a shot. And Mayweather's like, oh yeah, that's all I needed to begin with. And of course, it's just like puts him to sleep. Like, Phlox isn't letting him leave.
Yeah.
But in between those like Phlox scenes, we do get another like Trip is a jerk to T'Pol. And it's when she's like starting to figure it out. She's like in her room and she says, there's some very strange radiation coming off of this trinary system. And I need your help to look at these.
Yeah.
And I need some more like science devices in my room because I can't get them here because you're being loud and the, you know, I can't get in there.
Yeah.
and his response is just like, you dragged me all the way up here to look at some frickin' radiation readings. Like,
I'm doing important chair stuff right now.
Yeah.
Cause not only am I fixing the captain's chair, but this guy is the captain of the ship. So his chair has to have a special computer in it and has to like be on like rails. So it's like extra comfortable. And it's like, he's got all these things. And at some point I'm thinking to myself, oh, is this like, are they doing, again, dumb prequelitis stuff for like, because you see the chair on the original series and you see the chair in the new one. There's like all sorts of doodads on the chair and Archer is sitting in a gaming chair. So you're like, oh, is this like the birth of the captain's chair on Star Trek? The answer is no, which is funny, I think.
It is funny that that's a bit of a
yeah,
feint.
It's a big misdirect.
I also missed that I think when they were sitting at dinner and not paying attention to each other, Trip's concern was, should I add cup holders to the chair? Which I thought about like, that'd make Lawrence happy. Lawrence, Kansas.
It would make Lawrence, Kansas so happy to hear that there's cup holders on the chair.
But so this time, I mean, Trip is such a jerk to T'Pol this time. We could all die if the captain is not in a comfortable chair. Like, he is really taking a high road with this.
Yeah.
And she obviously is like, this is unusual. She's starting to get suspicious. And I think it's before we see at what she follows up on, we get a Malcolm and Trip scene where they just start getting super pissed at each other. And you know, that's because Malcolm's down in engineering trying to rebuild this chair. And Malcolm is coming in there and like playing different alarm sounds and being like, which one do you think is the best one?
Yeah.
And you know, that'd be annoying. Meanwhile, Sato is just like, the kitchen is a mess. She has apparently like started over multiple times and is like trying to like,
she's like going insane that it's a little salty.
Yeah.
Again, this is once again me behavior.
Yeah. And that assistant guy, he's actually a little surprised by how much she's getting into this. And I love her like reaction when he's like, do we have to do this? And she just starts like, carrots, I need carrots.
Like, what, you don't care about perfection?
Yeah. And this is one of those things where it's like, God, she has good like range and is a very entertaining actor that I wish we had more of her. And it's shades of how good she is in the Mirror episode seasons from this.
Oh yeah.
But yeah. Sato, she's great in this one.
We love Sato.
So this is where Malcolm talks to T'Pol.
Right.
And again, she's kind of like suspicious, but if you thought she was being a little suspicious, Malcolm is like, you need to say the code phrase. I sent everyone a code phrase because you could be like a shapeshifter. We've dealt with shapeshifters.
Like, we're dealing with shapeshifters all the time, actually. So you're like, I send you a voice encrypted memo to like,
Also, he's wearing a sidearm and she's like, when did you start doing that? And he's like, it's part of my new security protocol. And she's like, when did we get that?
Armed at all times.
Has the captain approved of that? And he's like, I'm going to send it to him. I'm just doing it now.
At some point, Trip also refers to Malcolm's new protocol as Code Read.
Code Read is very funny.
Very funny.
Yeah.
And again, like another misdirect. Like, they never actually say Code Red on the episode.
It's also kind of funny because he says that as a joke. And then later Malcolm is like, I didn't go with your read alert because I thought it would be too narcissistic. It's like, That's a funny joke. We actually get another thing that is shockingly charming for this series, because Malcolm is, as he's like talking with T'Pol and getting more like riled up, he's like, and if Archer doesn't want me to carry a sidearm, well, that's too bad. I'm getting real tired of his breakfasts and water polo.
He's like, he spent too much of this entire like mission to space trying to have breakfast with the crew. And yeah,
it's very good. And then, okay, I think it's probably like after a commercial break or something, but we get back to like current time to T'Pol.
Yeah. Like, or like where she is at the beginning of the episode, where she is in trouble with all the sleepy peepees around her.
Ian, and she's just kind of doing again that like diary entry of like, I was starting to realize that everyone was becoming more of an asshole. I mean, she says it in her Vulcan way, but
yeah,
it's like, she's okay. She's kind of figured it out.
Right.
So Trip insults Archer's writing ability in the next scene, which is very funny because it is atrocious.
You know, it's the writing he reads to him is so bad. And then Trip is like, this sucks. And Archer's like, good thing you're an engineer and not, and you don't know, because you don't know anything about writing. And they get really mad at each other. It's very funny. Yeah,
because this is kind of like Archer almost like trying to find people to talk to about his book thing. So when that doesn't work out, he goes to Sato and gets really mad at her in the kitchen. But
right. It's just like everybody like in shifts walking around the ship.
Yeah.
Going insane at each other.
Yeah.
It's really good. Oh, at one point also Archer, like Porthos is barking for dinner and Archer like flips out at him.
Yeah. Yes.
Poor
That's
Porthos.
Unusual for Archer.
Unusual. He loves that little dog so much. And yeah, he's being mean to him.
I wonder if the dog is also getting more irritable.
It's possible.
It's possible.
Possible.
So before the Sato-Archer interaction get too escalated, there's a tactical alert, which is literally Reed's voice going, tactical alert, with a siren.
The siren sucks so bad. I hate it.
Yeah, it's not good.
It's really obnoxious.
So this gets everyone on the bridge. And also already kind of more annoyed because there's a freaking alarm going. But it's just Malcolm being like, you got here in a minute, 38 seconds. That's terrible. It's just a drill. Now everyone's on the bridge and they're really mad about what they're already mad about.
Yeah.
But now they're mad about this. Things kind of escalate from here because T'Pol knows what's going on and is trying to convince them about it. I think Archer to like in that scene on the bridge is just like, I'm going to my room and I do not want anyone disturbing me unless there is like a core meltdown.
Right.
I think that's how it ends. And so the next scene is like T'Pol going to Archer's room. So it's been some time, but she's obviously like, I have to talk to you. And he is like, I said, don't disturb me. And she's like,
right.
She lists out what's going wrong. You know, everyone's being affected. And she doesn't know how why it's affecting people. Like if it's a virus or what, but she's like, something is going on and I need your help. But he just blows her off.
Right.
She's just like, it's not, no, you're wrong. I need to do this. This is so important.
I'm busy with my book report. Yeah. Like,
so she goes down to medbay and it's a good thing because
because Phlox like holding a big cartoon saw. Like, yes. Time to chop this boy's head open.
Mayweather is completely strapped down with all the futuristic surgery stuff. He's and Phlox is about to cut his brain open. And he's just like, hey, you're just in time. You want to watch? And she tells him what's going on. And he's like, look, I have to do this. I don't think you're right. I'm the doctor. Leave me alone. He basically blows her off too. And so she's just tired of this shit. It just nerve pinches him.
She gives him the old nervy pinch. It's very funny.
I guess I should say, he doesn't just blow her off. He literally holds up the like blade and is just like,
get out of here.
Get out of here.
Yeah. And Mayweather is sedated, right?
Yeah. Mayweather's completely sedated in this scene. So yes, it is. We get kind of confirmation later, but this is affecting Phlox even worse. Like,
right. Which I like. He's going like cuckoo bananas, like was going to kill somebody.
Yes. So and I like that there's different physiology between the three species on the Enterprise. Yeah. It's cool.
Yeah.
So this is, I think, another diary entry because she's like, okay, after commercial break, now everyone is asleep. I think the timelines have kind of like met basically.
Yeah. Everyone's gotten sleepy.
Yeah, we don't see everyone just start like stumbling and falling over. But what's happening is like they become like weakened. Like they're not unconscious, but they're just, they can't do anything because they're getting sick and dying, basically.
They've been crazy for too long. It's caused crazy sleep. Happens to me. I'm crazy all day and then I get very tired.
I get my special fixations. And then
I get very tired from just playing the synthesizer all day and then fall asleep.
To Paul does, and again, I just like how this episode script locks nicely into place. She's like, luckily, the fact that Phlox was doing so many tests on Mayweather actually gave us some clues as to what's going on. And it appears to be that our heads are being, a part of our brains are being affected by the radiation coming off of this trinary system.
Yeah.
I've determined, and this is cool because it's like you see a map of the trinary system and this is accurate to how most trinary systems work, which is one orbiting and then two binary acting almost as their own gravity well orbiting that one.
Okay.
And so that means there's this like between where there's two on one side and one on that side. And I'm going really into this because I'm getting fixated, but it's actually about like the radiation belts are going this direction. We can't go back where we came because we've been in it for a long time. We actually just need to charge through it and we'll be escaping it maybe faster.
Right.
But that means threading this like needle through the like intense gravity between all three stars where there's just debris everywhere. And that means she needs help.
Right. Like, cause she needs to be charting and she needs someone to fly.
But I just got to give this episode credit for like the science, you know, I don't know why like radiation would do this to people, but the science of like everything else going on here is actually pretty dang accurate. And that's neat.
Wow. good for them. Yeah. No. And they do one stupid Star Trek magic radiation thing, which is fine.
Which is,
Star Trek.
So she goes to Archer and I like this. She's like, she wakes him up by putting him in the shower.
Yeah. Like gives him coffee and he's like, this tastes bad. Like, oh, is like the radiation like affecting their taste buds? Who knows?
Yeah. And it works. It is what gets him to like clear up
a little bit,
little bit enough that she can get through to him that like this, we are going to lose the ship. I know how much you want to do this, but like, you have to listen to me. I mean, she's saying it more in her logical, it's not an emotional thing, but she does point out like, everyone's going to die if we don't do this. And so what I need you to do is pilot while I am constantly like readjusting our path through, and there's going to be asteroids everywhere. So we get that scene. And again, it's actually, I feel bad that Mayweather is sedated because this is a good piloting scene. And it's rare you get a way to convey that, like, because Archer does an okay job of conveying he's like sick. This is hard for him.
Right.
And this is tough to do, and he's doing his best. He's like, what'd you say? Like, repeat that. Like,
right, like he's out of it. He's sleeping.
I don't know. I kind of wish Mayweather got a chance to show off his piloting skills, even when it's really hard to do.
Yeah, I don't know why this was. I mean, it was Archer because they wanted it to be Archer.
Exactly. He's the main character.
Because he's the captain of the ship, but like, it should have been Mayweather, in my opinion.
It's weird to me, though, that in this sequence, he's a little submissive. Like, at one point, he's like, my mistake. And I feel like he should have been an asshole and then caught himself. I think that would have been a bit, I don't know. Yeah. But he's sick, so maybe it's just easier.
Who knows?
The one other kind of notable thing here that happens is they're just about to get through when a giant asteroid, like, crumbles in front of them. They can't even maneuver at this point. They need to start shooting stuff down. And when Archer says that, T'Pol is like, or I think it's T'Pol or maybe Archer. One of them says like, it takes like, I don't know, 10 minutes or 10 seconds or whatever to charge up the phasers. We can't do it in time.
Yeah. And unless
they're all active because of the read alert.
That's right.
As part of that system, he has the phasers charge up. And one of them notices that and they're like, great, shoot the asteroid. So they, you know, they blow it up and they get out. And immediately people start feeling better.
Tucker wakes up and immediately goes, did we get any good pictures?
Yeah, that was a bit silly, but you know.
No, that was good to me.
And then, yeah, I mean, the last of it is basically just another scene in Medbay.
Yeah.
Where, you know, that's where Phlox admits, like, phew, that really affected me. You know, I'm sorry about that. He seems pretty ashamed. He doesn't say what he almost did, but he's clearly like not looking forward to having to write up a report about what happened.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I'm trying to even remember.
Oh, then they go, and then Archer tells Reed, like, oh, you have to, like, I'm like, your stupid thing saved our lives. And Reed's like, I've gotten rid of it. And Archer's like, no, put it back, but change the alarm to something less annoying.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And then Trip is like, sit in your chair. How is Archer sits in his chair and he's like, oh, it's better. Yes. And Tucker's or Trip is like, oh yeah, I just lowered it by 1 centimeter.
Yes. Which, okay, pretty good joke.
Is pretty good joke.
Yeah.
Then everybody laugh, freeze frames, and the episode ends.
Yeah.
But yeah, like a good Star Trek episode, I thought. A good episode of Star Trek.
It gives us the, you know, what we want from this kind of series is stuff happens in space and you want to see how the crew adapts to it. And sometimes that's heroic stuff, like just a couple crew members pulling through. There's a lot of really well thought out pieces of both a character like doing something and then that actually mattering as opposed to feeling just like a throwaway. So much stuff that this series just never does, and it's all in this episode. It's just right, kind like of feels they've amazing.
Loaded everything good about the show into this episode, which is strange to do.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh yeah, like actually used the idea that several Star Trek-y things are not in place yet to like make a, I don't know. It was interesting. It was good.
Yeah, that's true. That's another good point that like a couple things you expect in a Star Trek. Like, again, we complained a lot in a past week's episode about there was, you know, everything could have been solved with a teleporter. Why didn't they use it?
Right.
I don't mind if they can't use it. I just want some good Star Trek explanation for why. Or
yeah,
say the even I think
say the gobos are diagonal. Like, I don't care. Just say
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
Just tell me you thought about it.
Yes. Or in this case, really think about it so much that it's like the you can write script and character interactions based on
a weirdly tight script.
Yeah.
Weirdly tight. And that's my review of the episode. Weirdly tight.
Yeah.
Weirdly tight.
It's always it's like I'm looking forward to when I don't quite dread watching an episode of Enterprise.
Yeah, we're right on the verge of when the show becomes okay.
Yeah,
I feel. Season 3 is the good season. No,
season
four,
and I
4 4 is the good one. Fuck.
I love 4. 3 is interesting because at least it gets like a more coherent point even if it's kind of dark.
Even though it's a more coherent point even though it's like a little bit evil and features a lot of like a guy in like a Planet of the Apes suit, but yeah, okay, sure. We'll get there. Oh yeah. God, will we ever get there? Season 3 is the season of the show that I am going to go cuckoo bananas, I think, on our show.
I believe. I'm excited.
So stay tuned for that.
Stay tuned for that. Mm. And tuned for next week.
Next week. When we'll watch the next episode.
Yeah.
Of the show.
Another episode. And if you want even more, check out the Patreon at temporalculturewar.com.
That is the address of it.
The webpage you can get directly to that Patreon.
What an incredible job you did remembering that.
I didn't want to just remember it. I didn't want to be prompted.
Okay.
I've done it like 3 times. I feel so bad.
No. Hey, listeners, we are fighting. We're fighting about it.
Yeah.
Me and Clayton are in a fight. We're having our first fight.
You can look forward to a Femme Fatale. That'll be on there. I think actually it'll be up there by the time this episode's up. So.
Probably. Yeah, because this episode's going up. Yes, 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 yes.
And if you like listening to us talk about a good episode of TV, you can listen to us talk about a pretty all right movie.
An interesting movie.
well, for Temporal Culture War, I've been your captain, Clayton Ashley.
And I've been your science officer, Manny Lipchansky.
And I was so waiting for him to end this episode with a let's go, but...
It really could have fitted in. But, you know what? Clayton, as always.
As always. Let's go.
Let's go.